94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum. And this morning, it's my pleasure to have some young people here who have been participating in something called the Literary Happy Hour, and it's sponsored by the Arts Council of New Haven, or Greater New Haven. And you're going to be quite inspired by these young people. You know, they've got a lot to say. They've got some opinions, and we need to hear from our youth, of course, and you're going to hear some of their works. I have with me first, we have a poet here. Her name is Sawa Abdusabur, right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I did it. I hooked up on that one. It's a beautiful thing. So tell me about yourself. You're from New Haven, right?
Yes, I was born and raised in New Haven.
Yes.
I went to Common Ground High School and now am at Gateway.
Cool.
I am a local spoken word artist, community organizer. Yeah.
Wonderful. Now you went to Common Ground, you said,
yeah.
Right? So tell me about what was your experience there, and how did that get you to Gateway, and what you're doing now?
Yeah, so Common Ground was definitely like an amazing experience. I loved it there. They really helped me with like the community aspect of like they have a really great community, and really helped develop like my leadership skills and things like that. Shout out to Common Ground. Then I went on to Gateway, and now. I'm part-time and do spoken word and do community organizing, and that's what I do.
So how did you get into spoken word, and tell me what inspires your work?
I got into spoken word when I was in seventh grade. I went to Amistad Middle School, and every year we would have a slam poetry for the upper school, so for the seventh and eighth grade. And that's really when I found that I had this passion for poetry. And in that contest, I won the poetry slam. And also during that time, I was also being bullied and definitely halted the bullying at a halt when they found out that I was I was doing that poetry, which was amazing. And it was a really great experience and really catapulted me off to keep doing poetry and writing, feeling connected to it in the way that I feel like poetry is the only way I can allow my inner voice to speak in the way that is clear to me. And so I guess the person that definitely inspired me, and I always got awards for this in school, Maya Angelou, was definitely 100%. My homie, my chick, like, really inspired me. Definitely.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, what do you draw from as far as your writings? What do you draw from?
What do I draw from?
Yeah, I mean.
I know what you mean. I draw from my experiences. That's where I find the most powerful of my poetry comes from, when I dig deep into myself and I draw power from painful experiences that I've experienced. And that really makes my poetry, because it's personal, it's intimate. I don't write for other people. I write for myself.
Mm.
And that's what I feel like makes my poetry powerful.
No, as a young person today, you know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, we're talking about, you know, bullying, you experienced that, you know, that's not something that's new, but it has been on the headlines, and, and people are talking about it. It's definitely something that, you know, people have focused on, you know, the violence in our community, you know, and as well as, you know, internationally, you know, the country is trying to become a part of this international community, which makes it difficult because of the economic times that we're in, as well as, you know, internationally, the economic times. Right. Mm. So as a young person today, you know, you're in college, you know, you're thinking about your career, you know, obviously, you know, you're into the arts, and, you know, I mean, how do you take all this in? Give me some perspective.
I guess I take it all in by a lot of times I put a lot of my energy and my time into not doing poetry as a part of my activist work, but also doing the community organizing, where I'm out on the streets, where I'm out doing the groundwork, knocking on doors, advocating for youth and youth voices, especially in New Haven, especially in the time that we're in right now, where youth feel definitely forgotten. And me giving that voice to youth and saying, hey, you have power, you have a voice, come out, let's do stuff, let's like let our voice be heard and make a change in our community.
Question for you, politically speaking, right? You know, I know America today has been extremely educated with this new campaign, mm-hmm. with this campaign that's happening now, in terms of whether your vote really counts, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, we've got candidates that on mm-hmm. sort of either side of the spectrum, right? You know,
yeah.
And so politically, you know, what do you think today's youth, are today's youth involved? Mm-hmm. Do they care? What is the story? What do you think?
They definitely care. They 100% care. I yes. care 1,000%. Mm-hmm. I think it's a different time than it was. I think that youth do care and they just want their voice to be heard. And I definitely think that people should go out and vote. Like, there's so much that we've gone through just to get this right, especially for African Americans. Like, go out, go vote. Go vote for who you think you need, who you want to be president. Like, even if it's like whoever. Like, but I do think the youth do care, because most movements start with the youth, mm-hmm. And it's always has been so. Definitely,
as an African-American female, where do you see yourself in the world here, and what do you think your responsibility is?
My responsibility,
yeah.
I think that I'm here to share my experiences, to bring awareness to issues, bring light to issues that usually don't get light shed on, but through sharing my experiences. And there is nothing really much. That's the thing that I do to show, to like spread awareness through my own experience, through the experiences that I've heard from people. And I think that I'm here to just do the work that do the things that need to be fixed, especially like in my community's place where I grew up, where like struggles that shouldn't be happening are happening, while there's kids down the street from a $27 billion worth school, and there's kids going hungry. It's just completely unacceptable. So I'm here to do that work and bring light and give voice to that.
Well, that's great. Well, listen, we're proud of you. You know,
thank you.
I think that you know, we need to encourage, you know, our youth like you. So question for you. I mean, I know it's early, and, mm-hmm. You know, in terms of your, you know, your educational career, but 5, 6, 7 years from now, what would you like to be doing? Have you given it any thought?
I've been thinking about doing, building off an organization or starting my own organization. In the city, and then branching out. And so doing community work, organizing, doing, especially still holding my, the art aspect, because it's so important. Art is so, so important, a part of activism, and just being and doing the work that I do. So organizing and doing my spoken word.
That's fantastic. So you've got a piece for
yes,
us, right?
Yes.
You know, everyone, this is Salwa Abdu-Sabur. You know, she's part of a literary happy hour that happens, you know, through the sponsorship of the Arts Council of Greater New Haven. And, you know, we're here today to, you know, sort of highlight, you know, our positive youth. And we've been talking to her about her art and her work. And now she's going to, you know, give us one of her pieces whenever mm-hmm. you're ready.
All right. This poem is called New Haven Youth. On October 20th, 1998, Yale New Haven Hospital, beautiful black legs opened. My mother birthed her very own statistic. And growing up in a broken city, you learn hard lessons and oppression. First lessons not taught by a mother's nurturing hand, but by the man. So let me take you to New Haven's modern day history. So pull out your high chairs, grab your baby bottle, class is in session, lesson one. You are too queer. Demonized by peers and staff alike, homophobic administration turning a blind eye, your sexuality an abomination, stones you with their glares, blood drips from an absent kind hand, red stains our compassion, black ink smudges our existence and history, we are puzzled pieced together, our civil rights movement, Martin, Malcolm, Rosa, while ripping out James, Polly, Bayard. Queer representation is a silent scream. No wonder black parents want us to choose between blackness and sexuality. Integrity and spirituality, not man enough to be a leader. Hypermasculinity clouds all emotion, affection, expression. Black men not gay enough, man enough. That reminds me, lesson two. You are too black to set foot on Slade's master campus. Less green grass, every blade, vibrant green, apple licorice, grown by your ancestors, shined with Negro spare ray, grown for their eyes, not yours. Ivory walls protect the naive and miseducated. I mean, most educated people you'll ever meet. you are too black. Your mind's enslaved as second class. Lay your head low, child. You are not a leader in your community. Sit down. Be silent. Let them speak on your behalf. You are not thinkers. You go to failing public schools. You not mention your peers starving. Bellies go unfed while businesses fill the insatiable pockets. Mama can't find a job in this jobs crisis that our city is so starved of resources that our only hope is a $27 billion endowment hoarding corporation. Don't mention New Haven's youth, believers, thinkers, dreamers struggle to find places where your voice will resound, where they will hear your outcry. No. Allow them to bless you with their ideas. Let them tell you you are uneducated, lazy, drug addict, fatherless bums, everything we've already heard before they retreat back to their suburban life. Be quiet. Be seen and not heard. This is not your city. Lesson 3. You are too young. Sound waves vibrate through strained young red, strep throats infected with systematic oppression, systematic depression of our collapsed larynx filled with every bullet that found its way into another youth's innocent mind. Watching your peers be shot down, too many names to count on both hands, but Javier knew one finger was his. Fated to die here in his neighborhood, hunting season was all year, wrote this poem in college. Damn, me and Javier were supposed to be here. Heartstrings pop, death by every peer. When one of us is shot down, we all fall down with them. Carving dirt from the earth, we carve the pain from our arts now filled, hopelessly hollow, created life from death. These green fogs soak in tears of dying innocence. No wonder we are forgotten. You are too black, too queer, too young, in a broken city where segregation between schools, neighborhoods, blocks still ring true. They cater to the straight white man in New Haven, whose haven, in a broken city where misfits dream, where they'll have a future. Well, they'll have a future in their futureless city, where you can believe, dream, and be who you are, where you aren't too black, too queer, too young to make a change, that we can be leaders without life exchange.
Thank you so much.
That was fantastic.
I loved it. Keep up the great work, you know.
Thank you.
And when can folks, are you going to be performing anytime soon?
I'll be around, but you can find me on Facebook. I have a like page. It's just Salwa, S-A-L-W-A.
Wonderful. Salwa Abdu-Sabor, thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Well, stay right here. You know, we've got two more poets coming up right here on the electric drum. Let's continue with the electric drum. I have with me Precious Musa. She is, along with all the other young people that we have here today, part of the literary happy hour that the Arts Council of Greater New Haven puts on here in the city. And Precious is, she's matriculating right now at Smith College. She's a rising junior. She's from West Haven. And she went to Hopkins here in the city. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank
wonderful,
you. How are you?
Wonderful. Okay, so of course, you know, you're a spoken word artist,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So, you know, we're going to have you perform, one of your pieces in a few minutes. But let's talk a little bit about you. So tell me, while at West Haven High School, you decided to, at Hopkins, rather,
mm-hmm.
While you were living in West Haven, you decided to go to Smith College. Tell me about that process. You know, what got you there?
You know, my sister graduated from there in 2012, and she is the main reason I'm there. I was so against all women's colleges. I was like, that's not for me. I'm not going to do it. And she sat me down, and she was like, Precious, these are all the benefits. This is what's going to happen to you at Smith. Like, these are all the opportunities available to you after Smith. And I was like, okay, let's do it. So I went, and I visited. And walking around that campus, I was like, these are the women I want to be like, I want to look like. So being there, and then my sister Pauline, major shout out to her. They really helped me get there.
Well, that's great. That's great. That's great. So was it everything that you thought it was going to be?
Yes. And okay. More and more.
All right. So so tell me, what are you passionate about? I mean, what moves you in terms of your writings and just your life? What are you passionate about?
I guess why I'm here, right? Poetry, words. Poetry found me at Hopkins late in the game, around like junior year. I guess it's sort of the origin story of a lot of teenagers, just writing down their feelings, and then teachers sort of being like, you have something here, you've got something. And so I sort of nurtured that, and I don't know, it's been a passion ever since, just being able to come to the page and articulate what I'm feeling, and then have people understand it and people vibe with it. It's really, it's amazing. Seeing people vibe with it is what keeps me going, really. Right, yeah. Right.
Now, of course, you know, as a young person, you know, we're living in some turbulent times, you know, and probably at no time in the history of America have we been into, you know, sort of international affairs as much as we are, you know, and how, and affecting, you know, the mainland, right? You know, and also all of the things that, in fact, you know, have been here for a while, racism, you know, and everything else, you know what I mean? A lot of homophobia in the country, you know what I mean? And we have an election right now that's sort of, you know, like the worst in both sides, right?
Both sides.
You know, so tell me, how does that affect your writing and how does it affect you as you know, as a young person?
So of course, racism has always existed and it still exists.
Yes.
And I think growing up in a Nigerian household, I was very much, blackness wasn't emphasized, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just grew up being, you know, precious. Like, I'm going to be in this space, I'm going to be me, and I'm going to claim it as my own.
Yes.
And only did I, like, when I got to college, was I sort of confronted with all of these things. Of course, they had been happening to me, you know, microaggressions, all that stuff. But I only really realized it when I got to Smith. So that has definitely affected my writing. Usually my writing started out with, you know, just personal things. And then it's still personal because, you know, personal is political and whatnot. But I tend to take moments, like this, the poem I'll read, it's a moment sort of expanded to represent something bigger. So I was telling Ifani that usually I'll be in a space and I'll be listening and I'll be taking it in. And a lot of, I spend a lot of time with, you know, people of color at Smith, and they're the happiest people I know, and they're the ones struggling the most half the time. So I was just finding that beauty and expanding it and just making it, because these are the people, you know, like, they're out there on the front lines, they're at the Black Lives Matter protest, they're the ones writing papers as well, you know? So being with them and seeing that beauty and seeing them work, it was, I was taking that and I was harnessing that and I put it into my work.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, let me ask you this question. I mean, one of the things that I noticed, my generation, you know, even though my generation was really the generation that sort of, you know, integrated, right?
Mm.
You know, and we were part of that generation where, okay, you know, we want what everybody else has.
Mm-hmm.
And we were willing to now, you know, not be so separate, right? And one of the things that I noticed, maybe I'm wrong, but I want to hear from you. Today's youth doesn't seem to focus so much on color as it is, how does each individual affect me versus black, white, whatever. Can you expand on that a little bit about how that affects you? And am I right?
On, like,
whether do you think that the issue of racism, as much as it is still an issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the main issue, right? Or is it, or my question is that, do you find that, you know, your generation is being a little bit more open to integration? I mean, in a sense, you know what I'm saying?
I think. I think what my generation is actually really good at is recognizing how intersectional identities are. So it's like, you're not just black, you're also a black female, you're also a black, like, cis, you know? So there's a lot of, all of your identities contribute to the way you move through the world and how the like world moves around you.
Right.
So I think my generation is very good at recognizing that. So it's not only racism, it's racism and homophobia, it's racism and transphobia, it's racism and sexism, you know?
Right.
They're all interlocking because none of them, they're not mutually exclusive from each other.
Right.
So I think my generation is really good at recognizing that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, do you find that social media is sort of like, you know, not only is it helping in terms of people being able to see the world as a bigger place, right? But might you also find that, you know, I mean, like, you know, like, what about that FaceTime, right? You know, Facebook is one thing. What about the FaceTime? You know, talk about that.
How social media is affecting everything now?
Yeah,
social media is playing a huge part. Twitter, what? it's huge. Everything, all you have to do, like, we know a lot about police brutality now because people just pull out their phone, they upload it to YouTube, they upload it to Facebook,
right.
Twitter, you know. Social media is playing a huge role.
I think it's good.
I think it's good. I think it's good because it's exposure. It's letting people, it's not letting people just slip by anymore. People are exposing other people.
You're a junior, so next, you know, getting close, right?
Yeah.
You know, what do you think about doing? I mean, any thoughts about, you know, at what to do after college?
Yeah, I'm trying to get my PhD in English, so I'll definitely be pursuing graduate school.
Teaching, maybe?
Teaching, yes, hopefully. Really? The dream is to be writing on the side, you know, and teaching poetry and having poetry students, you know.
That's awesome.
That's the dream right now.
That's great.
Yeah.
Precious. you know, So my community out there, my family out there, you know, I hope that you're being inspired by these young people that are, you know, coming before the mic. You know, I've been inspired already. And so you've got a piece for us, right?
I do, yep.
Yeah, so let's hear it.
Okay.
Yep.
This one's a fun one. I love this one.
Okay.
It's called On Dancing With My Excellence. I'm drunk, and my underwear is soaked in sweat. I pass the beat on. Her ass shakes with purpose. We scream, take a piece of that pass. Her body wins competitions, curves win trophies. How she do that? How we do that? I always think of poetry at parties. Wow. See how God speaks into her skin? Pass. My back, my hips rolling, rolling. Wow. This is all of me, isn't it? Thighs on legs, pressure from all sides. Let's dance, pretty black boy. No one else will love you the way my bones do. Point to her. She's got it now, electric. She points back. We're in love. What this do to us? We love. I found you, body. This where you start. This where you end. Wow. This be pleasure. My thighs, her ass, him in him. My love's cool breath on hot necks. Circling, circling, showing you, me, pointing, look. She work, she do. We're familiar. It's the blackness. We perform for each other. We move, see her, be her. This be us. In this room with our blackness, everything in freedom.
Wow, fantastic.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. I love that. Precious Musa, thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
For coming by. And please come back.
Yes.
You know, and actually come back when you graduate. Right?
Yes,
we
I will.
Celebrate with you. All right?
Anniversaries, yes.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
Stay here with you at Electric Drum. Stay right here. We've got one more of these wonderful young people who's going to sit down with me and speak some more right here on the Electric Drum 94.3 WYBC. Welcome back to the Electric Drum. I'm Juan Castillo, and this morning I've had quite a few young people here, you know, talking about their lives here in New Haven. They're artists. They're all part of the Literary Happy Hour that is sponsored by the Arts Council of Greater New Haven. You know, young people come down and they, you know, they perform, and you know, and it just, you know, it allows for young people to have, you know, open thought and you know, get their ideas across, you know, in a performance type, you know, situation. And I have with me right now Eben Orator, right? He graduated from Common Ground. You know, we're going to talk to him a little bit about his life and, you know, here in New Haven. And he's going to do also, you know, one of his pieces. You know, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, brother. How
right,
you doing?
All right. Growing up in New Haven, man. Tell me about that, man. You know, growing up in New Haven.
Growing up in New Haven, it's actually, it makes me anxious to even talk about it sometimes. It's like, right. It was a love and hate. You know, I...
Yes. That's real.
Up until the point I was 19, I just so happened to sponge in so much that was going on around me, as do most of us. It's just the only difference is I might have been a little bit more aware than others.
Yes.
But we all sort of still sponge the same kind of plight that goes on in these communities. And so growing up in New Haven was love and hate because I, you know, I, for me myself, being so like reserved to observe everything, I kind of saw the underlining torture of what my people were going through and where I was growing up at. And it used to pain me because... you know, my not to sound like it's a harp story, but you know, it growing up with close to 7 to 8 alcoholics on the porch every day,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Arguing and fighting both physically and verbally, and having a neighbor next door who just played with guns just cause.
Yes.
People getting into fights, the store down the street getting robbed, just basically all these things kind of just like looking from the outside looking in, it's just kind of like, damn, I wish we can do a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I also, it was sort of a judge-free kind of way because I also was looking at it in an objective way of like, well, why is this condition sort of forced upon this community and where did it come from? So all that to say, where it comes in as far as me being an artist, I'm a firm believer in the concept of being a product of your environment. I think your environment is a lot like society. So when you're looking at nature and when the climate changes and certain plants or certain foods don't last as long or they don't survive, it's the same thing as society. Society tends to change in a direction that it doesn't necessarily doesn't necessarily ask for the consent of all the people that are in it. And I think it's important to be aware of that and realize that it's being a product of nature as well as a product of your environment. It's one and the same.
Right. And, so, and it's interesting that you say that because, I mean, I think that, you know, so often being products of our environment, you know, some of us take different directions, right?
Yes,
you know,
of course.
And it's sort of to some degree, sometimes large, sometimes small, you know, we become who we become, right?
Right.
You know, but by the same token, though, right, you know, it's also all about, like, the fact that society at large sometimes tends to blame victims, right? You know, because, like, you mentioned all those folks that, you know, the guy with the guns, the alcoholics, sometimes, you know, like, you know, they're just products of their environment. By the same token, you know, of course, you know, there's personal choices, but then there's also like, okay, did the person really have a chance, you know, based on history, family history, so forth and so on. And so it's easy for a lot of folks that might not be involved or might not have experienced that in their lives to some degree feel that, you know, we blame the victim, right?
You know, well, in a really lot of cases, really
right, exactly.
No, not, you know what I mean? At least not in the way where we choose to blame them. You know?
Right. Yeah. You know, and so, you know, as a young person, you know, you haven't experienced that, right? You know, that sort of, you know, while at common ground, you know, you're trying to get your education, whatever that might mean, right? You
yeah,
know,
whatever that means, right?
Whatever that means, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, then trying to decide, like, where do I fit into the world, right, after high school? Can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, going off of Common Ground in particular, Common Ground, I personally feel it's doing a very revolutionary thing right now with agriculture and, you know, sort of reminding people about how important natural resources are when
yes.
it comes to the times that we're in now where everything from the food to the water we drink to the air we breathe is basically toxic mm-hmm. in many different ways. And now people are starting to resort back to, you know, going to natural resources and making their own gardens, figuring out a way to make, you know, have clean water, whatever the case may be. So I just wanted to point that out first before I actually answer your question.
Yes.
But being at Common Ground, I noticed just about my entire life, I kind of just was always reserved. I was always there, but not there
mm-hmm.
Mentally. And some people, you know, when you're in the curriculum where you're supposed to quote unquote pay attention.
Yes.
You know, when you're not paying attention, you're either labeled as someone who has ADHD
mm-hmm.
or someone who has an attention deficit, you know, some yes. kind of attention deficit disorder.
Oh, I get
that.
It, brother. I've been,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so, and the reality is that's not the case for every single person
yes.
that's not paying attention. So myself, I never was interested. I was more interested in observing people and watching people, how they think, why they do the things that they do. Because I myself have been through a lot of pain, and I know pain very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as fitting into the world outside of high school, the mentality that I had in high school versus the mentality I have now hasn't changed in that aspect in terms of still being reserved and watching people. I feel as though my specialty with who I am, not just as an artist, but as a person, is being able to analyze the gray area that most people tend to look over, where the media tells you that it's a black and white kind of thing.
Right.
And I don't mean black and white in terms of race, but at the same time I do, actually.
Yes.
But there's nothing, there's not many things on this earth that's black and white.
True.
There's a lot of gray areas sort of serving as a concubine for the black and white concept.
And in fact, you know, those gray areas a lot of times is where you find answers.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, but you know, it's interesting because I know that I have some friends, you know, who are from Europe, some DJs, you know, that actually, you know, are in Great Britain. And they talk about, you know, that education is really a whole lot about observing, right?
You know, it really
is. And if you notice, you know, a lot of Europeans that come here, they'll go sit down in a park and watch people, right? Mm-hmm. You know. Sometimes in America, we don't find time for that because we're moving. We're constantly moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I understand, you know, as far as that's concerned, you know. And so you went to college and you kind of like that, you found out that wasn't really for you, at least for now, right?
Yeah, you know, I don't fret on anybody who does decide to go to college because I feel like as though we're all on our own paths,
right?
Regardless of how the pace of America is moving.
Yes.
People still have to realize they're still on their own path. It may feel like we're all on the same page, but we're not.
Right.
Which is both a blessing and a curse in itself.
And what's interesting about what you're saying also is the fact that, you know, as much as, you know, great thinkers and even, you know, some educated folks, you know, here in this country talk about the fact that, okay, you know, it's really not about money, right? Even though almost everyone is going after the money, the whole materialistic thing, all of that, right? You know, because I think that most of us, you know, who have gotten to a point where, you know, we sort of feel comfortable, right, still realize that money really has nothing to do with our peace of mind and our ability to feel comfort, true comfort, right?
Of course.
You know, and so that's interesting, you know. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, actually, you just made me think about something. Even to expound on that, when it ties to money and education, and I'm pretty sure you can relate to this. Back in the day, a lot of people used to say to you, you should go to college to get a good education.
Right.
That was like the forefront of what people were viewing to go to college for back in the day.
Yes.
Now,
even today?
Yeah. No, even today. What I wanted to point out is that what I hear more often than none now is you should go to college to get a good job. And I think it's not a coincidence that the thought processes haven't changed, is because whether people realize it or not, when they say that, what they're really saying is we're living in a time where everything is such a fast pace and we have a heavy inflation rate with money. So that's why the economy is really bad, that money is taking far more value over the idea of going to college specifically for an education.
Right.
And people are starting to get in these places where, like, I got to hurry up and make some money, because the reality of even the idea of money, the idea of time is money. I took about about a month or two to just observe money and how it operates in people's lives. And I came to the conclusion that, the Federal Reserve, whatever you want to call them, I don't want to label what kind of group it is, whether it's a nefarious, underlining, lizard-toed group underground or if it's the corporate America. I don't really care about the labels. But whoever makes the money, the idea of money, is actually to literally be an embodiment of time. That's why everybody wants it, because everybody feels like they're running out of it. It's not really about the money. It's about people feeling like they need more time in general in their lives.
Right.
It's like sort of like being rich is sort of like finding the fountain of youth.
This is what I was talking about earlier. Yeah. You know, this is Juan Castillo. I'm speaking with Evan Orator. You know, he's a poet and an artist. One of the young people that I'm having here today and talking to them about how they feel about what is happening to our country and what is happening here and what's happening with their lives and how they feel. And yeah, and so, you know, my next question to you is that, you know, your art, right? You know, talk about your art and how did you first begin to write and decide that you wanted to, you know, to do spoken word?
Well, the art in general I was exposed to since I was three. My family, well, I don't know if I should say that. My family is basically some important people.
Okay.
And being around those important people, I was exposed to music 24/7.
Yes.
And yeah, so growing up, I kind of was like hereditary. You know, my grandmother played piano. My mom sang. My grandmother sang Negro spirituals. My uncle plays the bass. My sisters, they sang. We have rappers in the family, DJs, producers, all kinds of musical talent.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's all for the strength of me being a Pisces or just who I am, but I just happened to sponge all that in.
Right.
But as far as spoken word, I didn't start spoken word until I was 13. And okay. Then as far as emceeing, and I guess labeling it as, I guess, rap.
Yes.
I didn't start that until I was 19. And the process of that was when I was 19, you know, like with anything, I had a phase where I started sounding like everyone else.
Okay.
You know, because you try to sponge in like the skill first and try to interpret it in your own way. It's a phase of trying to interpret what's already out there in your own way.
Right.
Because in reality, nothing's really new under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just we all have different interpretations of what's already been under the sun for eons of time. Put a new twist on it. I think the calling, the true calling of when I started this art, that's classified as emceeing, was when, as I was telling you earlier, what I grew up around was like, I want to rap about the gray areas, but in a very analytical way.
Yes.
And I also want to do it in a way where it challenges people to think, and not just fall prey to whatever they listen to. Specifically with my people, you know, we tend to fall more towards the Democrat sort of aspect of our society, where it's a constant strain of give me, give me, give me. I don't understand you. Can you explain that to me? Give me. We need this. We need that.
Right.
And me seeing that, I realized that I would be doing a disservice to them to make it easy for them, because the society we're living in is not an easy society to live in. So where I came in with my own art, I'm still learning myself to play with the balance beam of being an overkill of content that might be a little too challenging, and at the same time, a content that people can grasp in a vibe sort of feeling kind of way, if not receive it mentally.
Right. So now, do you consider yourself part of hip-hop culture?
I am hip-hop.
Okay.
It's such a difficult thing to talk about. Like,
cause, I'm a b-boy. Bro.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, because, you know, it's weird because when it's like, because, you know, how hip-hop started, obviously, you know, most people know the story.
Of course.
It started with the five elements.
Yes.
And
including education.
Including education. That was sort of what was paramount to hip-hop back then. And, you know, I'm a part of the culture in the sense that if it wasn't for the culture, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But am I a part of the culture in the sense of that's all that I am? Absolutely not. I think hip-hop needs to be, if hip-hop is going to flourish the way that it's supposed to, we're going to need to start seeing hip-hop as not just a genre. It needs to be seen as a product of your environment, as I said before, which in a technical aspect, that's actually what hip-hop is. A lot of hip-hop is comprised of a ton of sampling from different cultures.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, but I think we need to get out of that that I'm not saying it's bad to do this. I want to be very careful. I'm not saying it's bad to sample. I'm not saying anything of that kind. I'm not suggesting that. But I'm just saying that I think we should try to go beyond and sort of further with what right. it is. Because
well, that's what hip-hop was all about. Also.
Yeah.
I mean, it was about creating new things.
Exactly.
Right? You exactly. know, and I think that, you know, you're part of that. You know, and for you to have that kind of attitude, I feel real good about our future as far as the culture is concerned.
Yeah.
You know, so you got your piece.
Right? Yes, I do. Yes,
we
do.
Definitely would love to hear it, man.
Okay.
So whenever you're ready.
Trying to decide which piece I should.
Oh, present. All right. take your time.
About the mood I'm in. And suddenly the wind seems peaceful, peaceful and serene, and the murmurs of the trees are captured so keen, but the grass still corrodes and the life still bleeds, spasmodic growth yet lifelong deeds. Held by its lungs, it fights to breathe. It hemorrhages legacy to protect the seed, but its veins are poisoned by venomous creeds and annulled by defunct and induced machines. The only thing still alive in the smoke and screams through the wars and the terrors of the vast regime. Yet the roots to this nectar of my Adam and Eve is to see strange fruit from the southernest trees. A paradox, is it not? How the worlds collide, the duality of the middle where the choice resides. Beneath the tree's bark is where our fears will lie, hence the mark of our nature being crucified. Beneath the black oasis of the sands is the blood of the earth, and the coffins for the children of impeccable worth. So the remnants of the soot imprint somehow negates that their life's expendable to American turf. I see vultures disguised as birds whistling. The leaves seem to cover the nest they all visit in. Manipulated climate shift, storms from an EHM. Mains focus the world's debt from a caucus in. Pillaging its seas from its colors and its richest terrain. Of its garden, of its people in indigenous name. Highest in the clouds quantity. Rain man, dropping his depression and results in the same. But in the swamps, there's a light that's awaiting to vapor. A Noah's Ark in the darkness that's lifting its anchor. Close my eyes and within me, there's a dominant savior. To the mind that is foreign to the soul of his nature. And to the soul of his nature. Thank you.
Thank you, my brother.
I haven't performed a piece in so long. I actually was kind of
I love words. That. I love that piece, man.
Thank you.
Brother, I want to thank you for coming, man, and just, you know, bringing some honesty. You know, I think that we need a lot more honesty in this world, and we need more realness.
Transparency. We need more transparency.
Absolutely.
Nobody's perfect.
Man. Yeah. Oh, no question. No question. You know, but I appreciate you coming, man, and please come
thank
back.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
And please come back. All right? Thank you.
Thank you.
Juan Castillo with you. Oh, man, I have had a great time today, and, you know, these young people have motivated me. They've inspired me. I'm quite sure they've inspired you. I've got someone who is extremely important in this process here. Her name is Ifani Awache.
Yeah, it's going to be Ifani.
Yeah, big up to her, you know. And she's going to come to the mic now, and we're going to continue with the show to talk more about these young people. Thank you for coming, brother.
Thank you. Thank you.
Finally, come to the mic. How you doing today?
I'm doing so.
All right. I know you're very proud of these young people.
I am.
tell us about how did you come to get involved with this?
Sure. Well, I feel that I should first say I came to New Haven as a Yale student. So I went
yes.
to Yale College. I have fond memories of WIBC.
Of course.
As you know, I was part of the radio station here.
Yep.
And so we got to work together.
Absolutely.
And during that time, that was amazing. And so I stayed on in New Haven after graduating to work on a project that I started at Yale, Africa Salon, which is a contemporary African arts festival. But I also wanted to really live in New Haven for once. I tell people that I've been in New Haven for 6 years now, but I lived at Yale for four of them. I live in New Haven now.
Right.
And part of the reason I was so interested in New Haven was because of the art scene and the little mm-hmm. I knew and sensed about it while I was a student. I just sensed that there was a lot of energy being put into creating spaces for artists and makers and writers and dancers and actors. In New Haven, based in New Haven, who wanted to work in New Haven. And I also sensed that there was a lot of talent here. So I just was really attracted to that and wanted to learn more about it. I think I'm attracted to stories that haven't been told yet. And I constantly want to you know, I'm a curator and I constantly want to find ways to elevate voices that I think are really important, really compelling, but aren't getting the attention that maybe they deserve, particularly Black and African voices. So I started Literary Happy Hour this past fall because I am also a writer, and I tend to, as a curator, try to create the spaces I want to see in the world. And I didn't have a space to come together with my fellow writers in New Haven, who didn't want to go to New York and perform necessarily, but wanted to get their work out here. I didn't have a space to come together with them regularly and share work in front of an audience who was hungry and excited for rap, poetry, literature, original writing. Because I think I knew of different open mics in New Haven, and I think they are really necessary in a lot of ways. But I wanted an event that was curated, where you knew you were going to sit down and, just like we did on this show, hear from several talented writers who were not necessarily trying this out for the first time, but who were really dedicated to this practice, constantly cultivating their craft and really putting effort into their writing and their performance, their presentation, and had kind of prolific bodies of work behind them also. So I wanted an event where you could go and know that you were going to hear an amazing selection of different writing, whether it was poetry, rap, etc., and be able to engage with those writers. And for the writers from different parts of the New Haven community who are doing that great work, to be able to come together and hear each other.
It's great. So now you got the Arts Council of Greater New Haven involved.
Yes.
So that was fantastic. Yeah. You know, I know they've been, you know, supporting these types of you know, endeavors for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's one of the little known secrets about our city.
Yeah.
You know, that we have a vibrant, very vibrant you know, arts council here, and you know, and I think that, you know, folks need to come, you know.
Absolutely.
They need to come here, you know. So question, you know, for you, you know, I mean, I've gone to a lot of poetry slams, and mm-hmm. I've gone to, you know, to spoken word, you know, events and whatever. One of the things that, you know, really was different for me today was that mm-hmm. I was able to find out more about those particular artists now,
right,
about their lives. And so now I was able to connect, like, their lives with their work, right?
Right.
You know, and I think that, you know, that did it for me today.
Mm.
You know, in addition to the fact that, I mean, I heard from some young people,
right,
you know, and about how they feel. And that's extremely important today, you know what I mean, for us to really hear from them and what they're feeling and what are their thoughts about the world and about the future, you know.
Right.
And we got that today. So I want to thank you, you know, for, you know, bringing them here. You know, and exposing them to the electric drum,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I feel free to bring some more.
Absolutely.
You know, you know, and thank you for all your work. And I mean, of course, you know, I've watched you grow,
mm-hmm.
you know, since you were a freshman here,
yeah.
you know, and I'm proud, you know, of all the work that you've done. And I'm glad that you stayed for a little while, at least, you know,
really, yeah.
So that's great. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right.
It's really a privilege.
That's great. Juan Castillo's electric drum. I know you've been inspired today. I know I have. We will see you next week. Have a great weekend.